This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Before we go on, I want to mention that we have a special feature of the show, a second radio show called After the Paracast. And the only way for you to hear that show is to become a member of the Paracast Plus, where we let you download that, a commercial-free version of this show with better quality audio and videos and more goodies. To find out more about the Paracast Plus, check out plus.theparacast.com. That's plus.theparacast.com. Prices start just $1.49 a week. And get this, we have a new YouTube channel, the official Paracast channel on YouTube. And I put up there a sampler for Paracast Plus, our 10th anniversary show, both the regular show and After the Paracast. So we're looking here at Dr. J. Allen Hynek with the author of Close Encounters, a man, Mark O'Connell. And now he's sucked back in to the UFO mess by Edward Ruppelt. And he's going now to talk to witnesses. He's out there as basically a field investigator. Did he do this alone or did he have help?
Well, it all depended. Most of the time he would do it alone because Project Blue Book's budget was so tight. It was a rare occurrence when he could get somebody to come with him for an investigation. Sometimes when he did have backup, it was a sergeant first class. It was sort of a low level functionary on the Blue Book squad who would get sent along to basically serve as Dr. Hynek's chauffeur. He would get the driver in the Jeep, and that's how he would get around when he was investigating these cases a lot of the time. But yeah, most of the time when he was in the field, he was on his own. That changed later in the 1960s when he picked up some new allies at Northwestern University, but I'm sure we'll get to that story in a bit.
You mentioned that there wasn't much staff, but I think a lot of people don't realize how small Project Blue Book actually was. I mean, it was basically whoever was in charge and a couple of secretaries and whoever they could recruit. I mean, it wasn't a large investigation. It was basically one tiny little office. Isn't that about the size of it?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there was this one moment in time, this one sort of snapshot moment at which Project Blue Book's budget was actually increased, and Edward Ruppelt was able to bring more investigators on staff. And that lasted for a couple of years. They actually beefed up Project Blue Book for a while, but their motives for doing that are kind of surprising. The Air Force wanted Project Blue Book to have more resources because they wanted Blue Book to be able to investigate and then debunk more UFO cases. So it wasn't that they wanted Ruppelt to get at the truth. It was that they wanted Ruppelt to be able to do a better job of sweeping the UFO problem under the rug, which I find very comical and very pathetic.
What did you expect from the Air Force? I think after Ruppelt left, though, it seemed as if Project Blue Book had fewer resources. Am I wrong there?
I think that's absolutely true. And a lot of that was simply because all the new project chiefs, and the project chiefs were rotated in and out every couple of years. There was so little consistency. But every new project chief carried with him his own biases and his own objectives for what to do with Project Blue Book, and they weren't always positive. Some of the project chiefs just wanted to be anywhere but the Project Blue Book offices. Some of them were just killing time until they could retire. And then at the end of the line, you get Hector Quintanilla, who was just absolutely hostile to UFOs from day one. So, yeah, the operation was scaled back over time. The budgets got smaller and smaller, and a lot of it was because of apathy, and a lot of it was because of just outright hostility to the project. And many times that hostility was coming directly from the project chief.
How did that impact the association with Hynek? Did he eventually quit or what?
Well, for a long time, Hynek stuck with it for a lot longer than anybody thought he should have. And I think he had good reasons for it. But he would sort of make things work his own way. There was a time in there when resources were slim, when he and his teaching assistant at Ohio State, Jenny Zeidman, who also assisted him with his Blue Book work, they would often get UFO cases reports sent directly to them. People would contact Hynek directly at the university and report a UFO case. And Hynek would say, okay, this is great. I'd really love to investigate it. But if I do it on my own, the Air Force won't pay me for it. So what I'd like you to do is send this report to Hector Quintanilla at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and then they'll pay me to investigate it. And sometimes that worked, and sometimes it didn't. But Hynek was very crafty at coming up with ways to sort of circumvent the restrictions that were placed on him in Project Blue Book.
So did he take that gig as a way to help feed his family, because academics don't make a lot of money?
Well, that was definitely part of it. I mean, when I talked to Paul Hynek about it, he said, yeah, as far as we knew, it was just, you know, especially in the early years, it was really just an extra paycheck to him. But, you know, as he was drawn more into it over the years, you know, it became far more than just a paycheck to him. One of the interesting aspects of it was he knew that if he ever quit Project Blue Book, then he would lose access to the treasure trove of UFO case reports in the Project Blue Book files at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And he did not want to lose that access. So because of that, he was willing to put up with a long series of absolutely disagreeable bosses and absolutely intolerable working conditions and restrictions. He was willing to put up with all of that just so he could have continued access to the Blue Book files. Now, what he did was, over time, copies of those Blue Book files would have a way of migrating back to Hynek's home office or his office at Northwestern University. So by the time Blue Book, you know, drew to a close in 1969, Hynek had done a pretty good job of, not all the files, but those 20% of the most interesting files, Hynek had done a pretty good job of making sure that he had copies of those in his own possession.
Was there a problem with doing that, or his access allowed it?
I've never come across any indication that there was any problem with it. In fact, it sort of seems people treated it as kind of a joke, like, well, of course he's making copies of these files. It wasn't until the very, very last days of Blue Book that Hector Quintanilla seemed to get wise to this, and he started putting restrictions on Hynek. He no longer had access to the files, and he no longer had access to the office Xerox machine, so he couldn't make copies of anything. So eventually, Quintanilla got wise to it and put a stop to it. But Hynek seemed to have gotten away with it for quite a while.
Okay, he obviously had a long-term plan here, though. If he just took this for a paycheck and the major goal was to explain away the UFOs, why did he keep all this information?
Well, he always hoped and believed that there would come a day when there would be a scientifically based group or institution that would be completely dedicated to the study of the UFO phenomena. And so he felt that it was imperative for him to preserve as much data, as many of the records as he possibly could on his own, because, you know, the Air Force couldn't be trusted. The Air Force didn't understand the phenomena. They didn't care about the phenomena. They certainly weren't going to hang on to these records if they didn't have to. So, you know, I think Hynek was always playing the long game. He always felt that at some point or another, there is going to be an institution. I don't know if he necessarily foresaw that he was to be the one who would found it, but he always had faith that somewhere along the line, this massive study would take place. And of course it did then in the Colorado study. At the time, Hynek thought, well, this is what I've been waiting for 15 years. This is what's going to finally crack the case as far as the UFOs go. So I think that was his thinking all along. Maintain these records because they are going to be valuable at some point. And at some point, there's going to be a really credible scientific team that's going to be able to take a look at these.
Now, the most legendary story we hear about Dr. Hynek is Swamp-Cass. And I want to ask you about that, how that came about in just a moment, because it's fascinating how some people get sucked into things that they didn't entirely expect. Again, the author, Mark O'Connell, the book, The Close Encounters Man, how one man made the world believe in UFOs. And I'm also going to ask how he came to be involved in a major motion picture, even getting a very, very famous cameo part that we all remember. And I think that part emphasized this character. Kurt Collins, our co-host. Mark O'Connell's our guest. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Lifetime Grazed 100% grass-fed beef has the health benefits you seek. When compared to conventional beef, it offers good fats while virtually eliminating the bad. That's the result of cattle who never eat grain, ever. Rich in antioxidants, including vitamin E, C, beta-carotene, and CLA. No artificial hormones, antibiotics, or other drugs. For all our fresh, non-cooked products with only 100% grass-fed beef, go to MidasResources.com. Use voucher code GCN to get 30% off your order. MidasResources.com or find us on Facebook.
Have you racked up more than $10,000 in credit card debt? Are you barely getting by, making minimum payments? You should know, the credit card companies are tricking you into thinking there's no way out. Credit card companies would rather you didn't know that there are ways you can become debt-free and you don't have to pay the entire amount you owe. There are debt relief programs that help people like you escape overwhelming credit card debt. National Debt Relief has helped tens of thousands of people just like you reduce more than $500 million of debt. National Debt Relief has helped so many people, they're A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau. You don't have to declare bankruptcy or take out a consolidation loan. You have the right to settle your debt for a mere fraction of what you owe. Reduce a large portion of your debt now. Call National Debt Relief at 800-314-7417. 800-314-7417. That's 800-314-7417.
Sal, remember when you said you were going to start paying more attention to your health and now you're eating potato chips?
Just a few.
A few, okay, but you should be eating Superberries Aronia Berries.
Aronia what?
Aronia Berries from Superberries.com. They're known for having one of the highest levels of antioxidants that helps with overall wellness. Go to Superberries.com/radio. And right now we get a free smoothie recipe book with our order. Plus we can save $4 at checkout.
Wow, look at all the benefits of these berries.
I know, Ralph, I know.
Choose health. Eat purple. Superberries.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Okay, the story of the Swampcast. This came ahead of those congressional hearings. So tell us more.
Well, it's March 1966. The American public is crazy about UFOs. And the reason is because John Fuller is writing a book called Incident at Exeter, which became a huge bestseller. And little excerpts of the book were being published in national magazines before it went to publication. This is all happening in the winter and spring of 1966. So the public is just fascinated with UFO reports at this point. And they are primed. The American public is primed for a huge UFO spectacle to take place. And then it did. On a couple of nights in March of 1966 in these small towns in southeastern Michigan, first of all, a farmer and his family saw some strange lights descending into the swamp behind their house and behaving rather oddly for a couple hours. And then the very next night, 87 residents of a women's dorm at Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, saw something very similar. They also saw floating lights in the arboretum outside the windows of their dormitory. Well, both of these cases become national sensations, and Project Blue Book, at first Hector Quintanilla does not want to have anything to do with the Michigan cases, but he gets pressured into sending Hynek. And this is a point where Hynek could have had colleagues with him, because by this time he had his two partners and buddies at Northwestern University, Jacques Vallée and William Powers, and he made the decision not to bring them along, which was a fateful decision, and I think he kind of regretted that. Because when he arrived in Michigan, it was just a zoo. The police officers couldn't really offer Hynek any protection to speak of because they were part of the story, too, because the policemen in the area had been sighting strange things in the sky all week. So Hynek arrives at this absolutely crazy scene in southeastern Michigan, this farm where these lights were seen. And he's doing his best to investigate, but it's just a mess because there are so many reporters there, and Hynek barely gets a chance to actually talk to the witnesses face-to-face. So Hynek never really feels that he's able to get really good research data from this event. Well, then he goes to Hillsdale College to visit the women's dormitory. Well, of the 87 witnesses, the dorm house mother only allows Hynek to talk to two of them. This is also fateful. Because instead of having 87 witnesses, he's only got two. And the two women who he talks to were not among those who said they saw this thing swoop down from out of the sky. When they first saw it, it was lights down in the arboretum that were sort of bobbing around. Well, another witness at this second sighting was Bud Van Horn, who was the local civil defense agent. And Bud Van Horn explains to Hynek, he had also seen these things from the dormitory windows because they had called him in to help them figure out the mystery. And he tells Hynek, you know, when I first saw those lights floating out in the arboretum, I thought they were marsh gas. So Bud Van Horn planted the swamp gas idea in Hynek's mind the day before the infamous Michigan press conference. Well, in my research I found, and I wasn't able to include all of this in the book, unfortunately, because of length issues, but over the course of the 3 days that Hynek was in Michigan investigating these sightings, as many as six different people floated the idea of swamp gas past Hynek and said, you know, it could have been swamp gas. What these people are describing, lights that rise and fall, they grow brighter or dimmer as if they're on a rheostat, and whenever there are other light sources in the area, they disappear. They seem to disappear. This was exactly what these people were describing. And this is exactly what swamp gas does. So Hynek is pressured into holding a press conference by Hector Quintanilla, and it's a really a big deal. The Air Force's number one UFO expert is going to tell the world, everybody expected that he was going to tell the world that, yes, these were spaceships that these people saw. I mean, can you imagine the excitement? This was a national story. Everybody believed that Hynek was going to say extraterrestrial spaceships. And instead, he says, swamp gas. It was a scandal. People were furious with Hynek. Everybody was furious with Hynek. His UFO colleagues were furious with him. Everybody in the state of Michigan was furious with him because they all thought he was branding them, you know, kooks and loonies. It was just a horrible, horrible moment. Hynek said it was his lowest point in his UFO career. After all the research I've done on this case, I believe Hynek said absolutely the right thing. He was a guy who only went where the facts took him. And in this case, the facts took him to swamp gas. And it's undeniable that what all of the witnesses described sound exactly like swamp gas. So I am actually a huge backer of Hynek's swamp gas verdict. I know that doesn't make me very popular in some UFO circles, but I truly believe this case is so well documented. There's so much information. If you really, really dive deep into the chronicles of this case, I don't think you can come to any other conclusion that it was most likely swamp gas that all these people saw.
It just didn't sound politically correct, did it?
No, it didn't. It made an easy target. But here's the really weird thing about it, you guys. In the week or two after the swamp gas pronouncement, Hynek became an international celebrity. He was being asked on lectures. He was being invited to go on talk shows. He was getting piles and piles of mail delivered to him, not just at Wright-Patterson, but also at the observatory at Northwestern University. Hynek became a superstar because of swamp gas. It makes absolutely no sense, but that's exactly what happened. Everybody wanted a piece of the guy, and he loved being a celebrity.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, I was in looking over Hynek's career, I was wondering, when did he first appear? But I found quotes from him in the 40s and I guess some into the 50s, and he's mentioned in RuPaul's book. But I don't guess he was taking part in press conferences before that. But then he really broke out. And how did he handle the celebrity?
Oh, he ate it up, from all accounts. Jacques Vallée, in his published journals, expresses some dismay. He felt that the celebrityhood went to Hynek's head and that he kind of lost his focus on the real issues of the UFO problem because of it. And I guess that's not an unfair representation from Vallée's point of view as one of Dr. Hynek's closest friends and colleagues. But I think also Dr. Hynek just saw this as, oh my gosh, everybody wants to hear what I have to say, and so I'm going to start talking because I have a lot to say. So I think for Hynek, this moment of when he suddenly became a celebrity, it was this amazing opportunity for him to educate the American public and say, look, forget about swamp gas. Let's talk about the real issues of the UFO phenomenon. There are many, many credible cases reported by many, many credible witnesses, and we need to pay attention to this, and we need to study them. We don't need to be wasting our time on these swamp gas cases where there's really no evidence and none of the witnesses can agree on anything. We need to really seriously concentrate on the good cases. So for Hynek, it was just this golden opportunity to become not a celebrity, but an educator.
Also, he could cash in when he started writing books. We do have to be honest about that. And that leads me to a story where I introduce Dr. Hynek to a famous author. This occurred in the latter part of the 1970s. And it was kind of interesting to kind of sit back and watch this interaction. I'll tell you what it's about in a few moments. Mark O'Connell, Kurt Collins, Gene Steinberg, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
The answer to being in control of your own health care is freedom from insurance. Become part of a group of self-pay patients that come together to share in each other's medical expenses. Individual share amounts begin at $107 a month and $347 for families. Choose from three health sharing programs. Holistic treatments may be eligible for sharing. See guidelines. Discount programs available for dental, vision, and pharmacy. Go to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
Being self-reliant is about being prepared and to do what you need to have your own source of renewable energy. Portable Solar LLC offers the most powerful EMP-hardened solar system on the market that is transportable from place to place, and the best part, it's very affordable. Contact them at PortableSolarLLC.com or call for details at 972-575-8875. Sol Arc EMP-hardened solar generator, energy insurance for your family or business. Call Portable Solar LLC today or go to PortableSolarLLC.com to check out their patent-pending technology.
It's about time something new came along for better selling and buying online. And I found it.
What now, Marge?
It's buysellmakeoffer.com.
Never heard of it.
It's a brand new company. That's why you've never heard of it. It's the newest and best way to sell any products online. I did all the research.
Sell my car?
Yes.
Our home?
Yep.
My golf bag?
Your golf clubs. All of them.
How about your purse collection hoard?
Hey, now.
You said any product.
Right. I did.
Hmm.
we get 30 days free.
And membership is only $9.95.
Yep. And buysellmakeoffer.com will never charge item fees, ever.
Hmm.
Never. And this is cool. Listen to this. You can even use Skype or video to show your items.
That's cool.
Yes. All we have to do is go to the website, sign up, and then load our stuff to sell. I love this site.
Buysellmakeoffer.com.
Buysellmakeoffer.com. You got it?
Buysellmakeoffer.com.
Buysellmakeoffer.com. Better selling, better buying.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-557-0158. That's 800-557-0158. Again, 800-557-0158.
Have you ever thought you'd like to flip houses but didn't know how or where to get the money? Are you ready to be your own boss so you can start living the good life? Hi, I'm Preston Neely. I used to be so broke. I had my electricity turned off 9 times, but I figured out a way to quit my job and find financial freedom in real estate. For a limited time, I want to send you a free copy of my smash hit selling book, How to Get Rich in Real Estate. It shows you how to copy exactly what I did so you can make money from the comfort of your own home without even doing any manual labor. I've already given away 5,000 books and they're going fast. To get one before they're gone, call 1-800-958-6936. Listen, if you're sick and tired of stressing about money, this book could change your life. It's short, fun to read, easy to understand, and awesome. To find out how to get your free book while supplies last, call 1-800-958-6936. Call 1-800-958-6936. 1-800-958-6936.
Hi, it's Grant Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So what am I talking about here? Well, in the 1970s, there was a best-selling book called The Bermuda Triangle. And it basically took all the legends of those alleged disappearances of ships and planes in the Bermuda Triangle, and he made a big deal of it. And the book was written by Charles Berlitz. Now, Charles Berlitz was the grandson of the founder of the Berlitz Language Schools. He's a guy who was very rich before he got into this and became a best-selling author. So how did I get involved with this? Well, I was doing a local cable access TV show, The World Beyond Reality, for a magazine called Beyond Reality. And I was a host because I had a broadcast background. So Berlitz agreed to come on the show, and he mentioned a few things about another case called the Philadelphia Experiment. And I said, I have some information for you. And we became friends. And I was considered some kind of advisor or contributor to a couple of his books where he gave me credits and a few free lunches. That's it. Of course, Berlitz really became known because he was the named author, in addition to William Moore, of the book on the Roswell case that brought back Roswell. Okay, having met Dr. Hynek and interviewed him, I knew he was coming to New York. And I thought, you know, two book authors, let's see if they want to get together, because Berlitz wanted to meet Hynek. So I arranged for Berlitz to meet Hynek in his hotel room. So during that time, it was like a 20-minute meeting. Hynek is asking Berlitz what he could do to promote his books. This is probably before they made the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And it was really fascinating to watch these guys at it. I understand Berlitz was a character. He had a twinkle in his eye. He would tell me more often than you would expect, I'm honest as the day is long. And you have to say, if someone says that over and over again, he's telling you something. Kirk, you had a little insight into something that Berlitz did to our cultural lexicon, right?
I was looking up the origin of a phrase, and it's associated with Stanton Friedman, but in you mentioned the Bermuda Triangle book. That's where the phrase cosmic Watergate first came out. Berlitz was mentioning that in interviews, and obviously Stanton Friedman liked that, so he went into that, which, of course, is the shorthand for a UFO cover-up, comparing it to the Watergate cover-up. And Mark, what was Hynek's position on the cover-up? Because, you know, he was, as a skeptic debunker for the Air Force, you know, he was accused of being part of it.
Oh, yeah. Which was always very uncomfortable for him. He did believe that there was another study of UFOs going on somewhere in the government. But he had a funny saying about cover-ups. He said, look, you can cover up knowing something, or you can cover up not knowing something. And he truly believed that whatever the Air Force was covering up, it had to do with them not knowing something. That's the way he saw it. But he did agree, though, that there was probably some office somewhere in the Pentagon or at Langley where somebody was keeping tabs on the UFO problem. But he never really believed that the Air Force actually understood anything about the phenomenon at all, even to the bitter end.
So that's an interesting point here, because there are people out there who talk about, as we say, cosmic Watergate, believe that the government has the truth somewhere. They only need to disclose it to set us free. In the early days, Major Kehoe was talking about a silence group enforcing this policy. And they all had to know UFOs were spaceships. It was so obvious. How could it be otherwise? But if you say if the government doesn't know, one thing you'd want to do is sweep it under the rug. You don't want to admit you don't know. You could have generals or other military commanders saying, hey, we can't admit we don't know what's going on. Some people might panic. A lot of different explanations, none of which mean they know any truth about it. Am I correct?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So let's go into the migration here of Dr. J. Allen Hynek becoming an international celebrity. When did the books about UFOs begin?
Well, his first book, The UFO Experience, came out in 1972. And it was one of the more scholarly UFO books ever to be published. He talked a lot in that book about his experiences with the Air Force and, you know, sort of retraced his history and his personal journey as a UFO investigator. But he also started talking in that book about two important things. One of them was, as I mentioned earlier, the human factor, which he became really aware of when he went out onto his first field investigation. He really paid attention in his book to the kinds of people who were having UFO encounters and how it affected them and how they perceived their experience and how they would try to relate their experience. He was always very, very struck by the fact that UFO witnesses were trying to describe things for which we don't have words. How do you describe something that doesn't have a name or doesn't have any words that we have that apply to it at all? It was a very strange situation, but he really paid a lot of attention to that in his book. He also, in that book, started to elaborate on his system for classifying UFO events. He had been doing a lot of work on coming up with ways to categorize UFO sightings. As a scientist, of course, he thought the first thing we need to do is categorize phenomena, look for similarities, look for patterns and relationships. So he started developing a really simple categorization system with three different categories. It's not the ones you're thinking of. In this first book, he talked about daylight disks and meandering nocturnal lights, and the third variety was visual radar sightings. And he spent a lot of time in the book cataloging many, many different instances of these three different types of UFO encounters. And he was most interested in the visual/radar contacts, because he felt that those were the most credible, and he felt that those actually those cases actually had enough scientific information that you could actually do a credible scientific study of what was involved. So that was kind of the breakthrough with that book in 1972. Then after those first three categories, then he also went into some detail about three more categories, and these are the ones we're all familiar with, the close encounters. And, of course, a case that starts out with a meandering nocturnal light can eventually become a close encounter. So these two groups of three categories all sort of meshed with each other. So close encounters. What are the close encounters? Well, close encounter of the first kind involves visual contact with a UFO, and Hynek would generally give a distance of about 500 yards, 1,500 feet. He felt that was close enough that you could actually make out physical details of the object. You could see its size and its shape and whether it had a solid outline, things of that nature. Close encounter of the second kind was also within 500 yards, but it included the object having an effect on the environment, and that could be leaving behind burning bushes or landing pad imprints. It could mean knocking out a car's engine as the UFO flies by. It could mean the witness suffering from welding burns on their retinas or from radioactive exposure. So that was the second kind. Those were Hynek's favorite cases because, again, they provided the most meaty scientific data. Close encounter of the third kind, he never wanted to deal with close encounters of the third kind because they were too absurd. They were too far out. Those were the cases involving occupants of the UFO. And in a close encounter of the third kind, the witness would either see the occupants or actually interact with the occupants of a UFO. Hynek hated those cases, but he felt he had to include them because there was so much evidence saying that they were happening.
Of course, one notable example that we have to think about is Socorro, New Mexico, where possible beings were seen in connection with that case, and Dr. Hynek did investigate it. More to come with Mark O'Connell. Hanjean and Curtis, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Neighbors, I want to tell you about my favorite graphics app. It's the award-winning Graphic Converter. You know, Graphic Converter is the universal genius for photo editing on your Mac. Join over 1.5 million loyal users for this Swiss Army knife photo editing app. It gives you all you expect from a top-flight image editing app with tons of features, and most important, it's easy to use. It's also far less expensive than that other app that you can only get by subscription, you know, the one I'm talking about. What's more, you can get 20% off with your order right now. So write this down to learn about Graphic Converter. Go to www.lemkesoft.de/gene. Let me spell that. www.lemkesoft.de/gene.
Fully cooked, ready to eat bacon. I'm talking thick, meaty, center cut, presidential bacon. Savory and delicious. I buy some, I use some, I store some. Awesome. No refrigeration needed with a 10-year shelf life. NASA pack technology. Bacon. Fully cooked, fully hydrated, ready to eat right from the pack bacon. Or warm and served. Life-saving, ready to eat bacon. 10-year shelf life bacon. Ships free at fullycookedbacon.com. Fullycookedbacon.com.
If there's a toxic chemical, biological, gas smoke emergency while traveling at home or on your job, are you protected? Are you prepared? There are over 400,000 fires in the USA every year. Up to 85% of all deaths in a fire are due to smoke inhalation. 3 minutes without air and we as humans will die. Be prepared and escape safely with our Safe Escape smoke hoods, giving you up to 60 minutes of breathable air protection. Order yours online at ase-safety.com. That's ase-safety.com. And get up to 40% off plus free shipping.
Are you living your passion? Are you pumped to go to work because you get to talk about or work with or do the things that interest you the most? Is working, playing, and relaxing one and the same? As long as you're working for someone else, you'll never be living entirely true to yourself and your passion. I'm Pharmacist Keith. Let me show you how you can work around your current schedule, create the extra income so you can live your passion. visit radio.recordedvideo.com. That's radio.recordedvideo.com. Radio.recordedvideo.com.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free Reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body Brain and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
So, we have the various close encounters. He doesn't like the close encounter of the third kind because of the implications, but Sicara, New Mexico was a possible CE3. Did you look into his attitude about that case?
Oh, yeah. That was an important case for him. So the case involved a local police officer, Lonnie Zamora, who was out chasing a speeder one day towards the end of his shift, and he passes these hills outside of the town of Sicara, New Mexico, and he hears a blast, and he sees a jet of flame coming out from beyond these hills. So he gives up on chasing the speeder. He steers off the road onto this gravel track that takes him up a steep hill. So he's driving along this ridge, and down below the ridge, he sees what at first appears to be an overturned car and two people standing next to the car, very short people wearing white coveralls is what he saw. Well, then he gets a little closer, and the two people see him coming, and they sort of jump in alarm and disappear. By the time Lonnie stops his car and scrambles down the hill to get a closer look, the two people, or humanoids, have disappeared. Apparently they've gone back inside the egg. And that's what it is. It's not an overturned car. It's this gigantic aluminum egg supported by landing struts, and it starts to roar, and flame shoots out from the bottom. So Lonnie scrambles back up the hill to his squad car to hide as this thing launches into the air and then shoots off horizontally towards the horizon. Lonnie is very shaken. He calls in backup. A state patrol man shows up within minutes and finds Lonnie essentially in shock. And they go back down to the bottom of the arroyo, and there's a burning bush from this object's flamed exhaust. There's a burning bush, and there are landing mark imprints. So here you've got a case witnessed by a very, very credible witness, an extremely no-nonsense, by-the-book, Joe Friday kind of a cop. His story never changes, even after he's telling it multiple times. And there's physical evidence. There's burned brush, and there are landing mark imprints. Well, Blue Book had to do something about this very quickly. So Hynek was sent to New Mexico on just a couple hours' notice, basically to tamp down the whole story before it became too sensational. But there was really nothing he could do. The story was already becoming sensational on its own because of the humanoids associated with the object. And there were other witnesses. It turned out there was a family who were passing through town, had stopped at a local gas station in Sicara. As the attendant was filling up their car, the dad of the family asked him, "So, you know, you got any weird low-flying aircraft around this town?" And the gas attendant says, "Well, you know, we've got the Air Force base and the missile grounds close by, so there are an awful lot of helicopters in the sky." And the dad says, "Oh, this was not a helicopter. Something buzzed our station wagon as we were driving through town, And a minute after that happened, we saw this patrol car veer off that highway and drive up this gravel hill, this gravel road up this hill. Well, obviously, they had seen Zamora. So all of a sudden, we have a corroborating account that supports Zamora's testimony. So Heinig is faced with this really pretty perfect case. Credible witness, physical evidence, and a backup witness who verifies the initial story. Heinig ended up calling this the Rosetta Stone of UFOs because he felt like all the right information to possibly decode the whole UFO problem might be right here in this case.
The credibility of the witness is interesting in this because even among some of the pilot cases the Air Force investigated, there was always a suggestion that it was a misperception or an exaggeration. But as best I can tell, there was really no one was impugning Zamora's character. He was considered a reliable witness, and it wasn't just Heinig that thought so.
Yeah, and in fact, even the people who tried to knock down the case, they never accused Zamora of seeing things or making things up. What was generally done to sort of explain the case away, and Hector Quintanilla tried this strategy on his own, the general strategy for debunking this case was to say, well, it was obviously a top-secret test craft that was launched from the nearby Holloman Air Force Base or the White Sands Missile Ground. It was probably a prototype lunar lander for the Apollo space missions. That's what a lot of people thought. But even those people, they never actually tried to say, well, Zamora was nuts or Zamora didn't know what he saw or didn't know what he was talking about. They accepted that he had seen something. They just had a different interpretation of what that object was.
Now, I want to get into the obvious point where CE3 becomes the focal point of a major motion picture. So, early 70s, Steven Spielberg is starting work on a new film. How does Dr. Heinig connect with that?
Well, early on in my research in the Kupos files in Mark Rodiger's basement, I came across a manila folder labeled Spielberg. So, of course, I got excited and I pulled that folder out and I sat right down at the table and I was going to just dive right into that. Well, it turned out to be a very thin folder. There was not much in it. But what there was there was pretty eye-opening. So the first thing I see is a letter, a copy of a letter that Heinig had typed up and written to Steven Spielberg in the mid-1970s. I think this was probably 75 or 76, I think, when this took place. So there's this letter that Heinig has written to Steven Spielberg saying, "Hey, Mr. Spielberg, I understand you're making a movie and you're using my title. That's okay, but I really wish you had contacted me. It's kind of weird that I had to find out about this from reading a magazine article." So the letter is so painfully trying to make the point that Spielberg has done something wrong, but at the same time trying to be very gentlemanly and diplomatic about it. So the way Heinig has worded this letter, it's just kind of a masterpiece in sort of walking on eggshells. But the message gets through. And about 2 weeks later, Steven Spielberg writes back to Heinig. There was a copy of that letter in the file as well, in which he says, "Oh, gosh, I'm really sorry. I didn't really realize that the title was your property." But he said, "I want you to know, number one, we aren't going to use that title. We're actually going to call the movie Watch the Skies. And number two, I insist that everybody on my creative team read your book, The UFO Experience, as basically their UFO 101 training before they go to work on this movie." So ultimately, they got everything all ironed out. Heinig was hired on as technical consultant for the movie, and he was hired on to be on set for no more than 3 days to render services. And he ended up spending those 3 days not in Hollywood, but in Alabama. Close to you, Kurt. They ended up rented a airplane hangar in Alabama, in Mobile, Alabama, because there weren't any sound stages in Hollywood that were big enough for what Spielberg wanted to do with the climax of his movie. So the whole final act of the movie that takes place at this secret UFO landing base in the shadow of Devil's Tower, Wyoming, that was all constructed in this airplane hangar. So Heinig spends 3 days on set being technical consultant and just basically enjoying the hell out of himself and his time on set. And they shoot this cameo shot that ends up being about 6 seconds long. And it comes in right around the time the huge alien mothership has appeared and has descended on the UFO landing site. And it's shining brilliant light everywhere. And all of these scientists and technicians in their white lab coats are all kind of hanging back, not wanting to get close to the mothership. But then all of a sudden, this older, bespectacled gentleman comes weaving his way through all these white-coated scientists, and he's fiddling with his pipe, and he's stroking his goatee, and he's the only person in the shot who's actually striding forward towards the mothership. And I think it's just a beautiful moment for Hynek, because it just really shows, in 6 seconds, Spielberg showed exactly who Hynek was. He was a guy who would keep going forward. He was the guy who would be walking towards the mystery, not holding back.
Also, he tended to be kind of low-key kind of guy. That's the impression I had of him there. But in the end, he basically was the main influence for this movie, at least his book and everything else. Did they pay him more than 3 days' work, or was that it?
Well, actually, in that file, there was also a copy of the contract that Hynek signed with the producers of the movie. And I go over all this in the book. If I'm remembering right, what they paid him was, for the rights to use the title Close Encounters of the Third Kind, they paid him $1,000. They paid him an additional $1,000 for permission to dramatize any of the stories that Hynek told in the book. And then they paid him $500 a day for each of the 3 days he was on set as technical consultant. So all told, he made $3,500. Now, you have to remember that's $3,500 in 1977, which makes a big difference. But you also have to remember that even though Spielberg's first movie, Jaws, was a huge, huge mega hit, nobody had any idea what kind of business Close Encounters would do. It had an awful title. You know, as much as we love the title now, as much as it's become a cultural icon, people hated the title at the time. Close Encounters of the Third Kind, what a stupid name for a movie. So nobody knew how well the movie would do. So the fact that Hynek was paid very little for his services is kind of offset by the reality of the situation. Of course, the movie producers were hedging their bets. They didn't know how well the movie would do.
Let's do our break. More to come. Mark O'Connell and Kurt Collins, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast Jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Did you know that your children are the most vulnerable to identity theft? It's no surprise with all the mobile phones, social media platforms that your children will eventually be a victim to one of the most significant crimes of the 21st century, identity theft. Don't let that happen. Cover your whole family, your spouse, your children, and your parents right now by calling Liberty ID. LibertyID.com is where you go for a significant discount just by using GCN at checkout, or you can call 844-44-LIBERTY. That's 844-44-LIBERTY.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey purified water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest price filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.